Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics, such as...
Mayor of Easttown. Miss Mayor was basically her same character from Ammonite, who's a raging lesbian. Like, why not just keep the theme going? Yeah, my girl had mad, like, lesbian energy. You know, I don't know why they had to, like, just make her daughter queer. Oh, spoiler alert. Not really, right?
No, not anymore.
Go watch Mare of Easttown. It's so good. I watched it twice. So
what?
HBO still killing it. What up, Corona?
What's poppin', Chingona? Was good?
Not much. I just got through with my hair routine, and it delayed the recording of this podcast, so I'm sorry.
Oh, what? What's your hair routine? You're blonde still, right?
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. My hair's been dry, so I got a bunch of, like, new... It's, like, my last attempt to find a way to make my hair healthy while also blonde. So if this doesn't work, if this, like, expensive-ass routine doesn't work... Then I guess that's it. I'm going back to brown or something.
Wow. Back to black. Amy Winehouse. Okay. Mm-hmm. We see you. No, yeah. I fucked up my... I dyed my hair like that. I went through that like white hair phase that everyone went through. And I was like, yeah, never again. Never doing that ever again. I just... No.
It's a commitment.
Unless like I'm emotionally going through something, like if it's like the end for me, like you're gonna see me dye my hair like blonde.
Wow, that's how you know.
I mean, where's that tweet? It's like check in on your friends that just dyed their hair blonde. Yeah,
when I dyed my hair blonde, I was like, how does nobody notice that I'm having a nervous breakdown? No, I'm just kidding. I really like my blonde hair.
No, it looks good. It's always like a transformative time in anyone's life when they get blonde hair, though. It's like a rough time.
Your late 20s, you know, that's what it is.
You're still stuck in your 20-somethings. Okay, SZA Stan. Okay.
I only have a little over a year left of this, so I gotta get my shit together fast.
Oh, shit. I forgot. Your birthday's coming up, Leo season. Are you excited?
I guess. it's You're weird. Late, I feel like 28 never happened, so I'm a little like weirded out by it all. But yeah, sure. I don't know.
Sure.
It'll be fine.
I'm like still in denial. I'm not 30 yet because last year got taken away from me. So obviously I'm still 29. It's fine. Yeah, I've already gotten old enough to where I forget how old I am. Like, I'm like, wait, how old am I going to turn this year? I'm like, what's going on? But yeah. So, what have you been watching?
A couple of things. I went to go see Escape Room. I think it's called Tour of Champions. It's the second in a series. Mm-hmm. And the first one was really, really good. People of color and all kinds of cool, like, shit. And then the second one had India Moore, which I was like, okay, you got me again. Let's go. So it was pretty good. I was really excited to see it. I think it's a movie that no one knows about, really. But
never heard of it. Yeah. You are correct.
Yeah, but I love it. It was good. The first one and the second one was really, really good. And you can tell, like, they set it up like a fucking Netflix series. Like, season 3 is coming soon type of thing. So I'm excited.
Okay. Yeah, you're correct. I've never heard of that. it seems really interesting though, so shout out to like watching something that has some interest. But what else have you been like watching?
I've been watching a lot of is this problematic? I'm gonna get canceled. I've been watching the Olympics a lot.
I noticed.
I haven't stopped for like 4 days basically, except for today, so I could like get my shit together and do this episode. But you know, to be fair, I've been very specific with what I watch, and that is to say, any like all of Naomi Osaka's matches, I watched all of those because she's brilliant.
Oh my god,
got
yes.
my heart broken watching her final match. It was very hard. It was hard to watch. You could tell that it wasn't that the other person was better than her. It was just that she was having an off day. But you know, it happens. And then I also saw everything that Simone Biles did. She was still amazing. What's wild is that she was off her game too, but she was still amazing. Like, still absolutely breathtaking. And of course, I watched the skateboarding, like the women's skateboarding, and it was fantastic. This is the first year that they have skateboarding in the Olympics ever. So it was really, really interesting to watch. And they had a non-binary Olympian, Alana Smith, from here, from the USA. They didn't place very high, but their energy was great. And all of the skateboarders' energies were great. It was like watching Betty, but Olympian style. And everybody looked like they were queer.
Yeah, everyone looked gay.
Everyone looked queer as hell. Damn, bro. Yeah, so it's been really nice. And of course, I'm watching the U.S. women's soccer team. They've been not doing as good as I want. And then probably tonight I'll watch this is like middle of the night shit, dude. This is how dedicated I am. But I'll probably watch the men's Mexico soccer match tonight or this morning, 4:30 in the morning. 4:30 if you guys are up, text me. Yeah. For me, for you, it's like 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, that's true. That's not as bad. What the fuck? You know what's the best thing about like social media is that I don't have to watch the Olympics anymore. Y'all watch it for me. Like, I don't have to keep up with shit. Like, everyone else is giving me updates.
Never watched the Olympics before in my life. Never had an interest.
Really?
Really. I've never cared for
it. The year it's canceled, you're like, okay, I'll watch it.
Yeah, the year that I become it's been problematic. I feel like it's just that now we know these things, but it's just so, like, I would never spend a single cent on it. It just so happens that a very good friend of mine likes sports and stuff and gave me his login to a bunch of stuff. So I just log on in and watch the stuff for freezies. I don't spend money on it. It's fine.
Okay. All right. All right. That's fair. That's fair. But, I mean, for me, I'm like, look, after what they did to Shakari, like, I can't fuck with them, because like,
pretty trash.
It's like, she's from where I'm from, and like, no, y'all, for her to make it like there, that's a big fucking deal for everyone out here.
Absolutely.
But also, like, the whole CBD cannabis thing that happened on Instagram the very next day with Sue Bird and Megan Rapinoe, they were talking about how they use CBD and all this bullshit, and then it was so blatantly white. I couldn't. God. I love them as athletes and as humans, but I'm just like, this is not the move.
Rapinoe was slacking last night, all right? Rapinoe, they needed to trade her out. Like, no, I was so mad.
Damn. Like,
Rapinoe was a freaking paperweight last night. I was so angry. Sorry. I had to rant for a bit.
Shit. Yeah, I have no idea what's happening in the lesbian sports world other than, like, WNBA stuff. But, like, no, I'm not keeping track. Goddamn. What the fuck, Megan Rapinoe? See, just fucking up everywhere. I don't know. But,
you see what happens when you're problematic?
Yeah, I mean, she tries. They try. But yeah, no, I have not been watching the Olympics. I've been watching, and I think I'm pretty sure we'd already talked about this, but I'm watching The White Lotus.
Same. Oh my god, this is like Succession, but like a little more palatable for me.
Wait, really?
It reminds me of Succession a lot, because it's just based on really awkward, tense moments with people of privilege.
At work. Yeah. Someone was like, this isn't a fucking miniseries, this is a documentary, and I'm like, word, it really the fuck is. Me and Glow are just sitting there like co-signing everything, like, yep. And oh, there she goes, she's rolling her eyes, and now they're gonna talk to the manager again, like, here we go again for the third time today. Like,
the boy Karen character.
Oof.
Yeah, it's, and the thing is that it's such a delicate project, like if you just took out the soundtrack, the scoring of it, it stops being a good show. If you just take out,
that's true,
like, this, or like, it's so such a delicate like combination of elements that makes it a really good show right now, but you take out one of those elements and it's like, what the fuck is this?
Correct.
So I'm really curious to see how it goes.
Yeah, no, it's been really interesting, and there have been hints of queer, and
it's gonna be there. Get to leave from Euphoria for no reason.
That's true. And she started off on Everything Sucks, so
yeah,
we can trust this.
R.I.P. that show was bomb.
It was problematic, but it was really good. They could have waited a couple years to film everyone again, but yeah, anyways, no. But yeah, so The White Lotus, y'all, it's on HBO Max. It's awesome. And so is Gossip Girl, and it's as
you
bad
like
as...
it?
It's no, 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 boring. No, I don't like Gossip Girl. It's just, as bad as I thought it would be. I'm just kind of like, yeah, it's Gossip Girl, y'all. It's CW-level writing. Go for it.
I thought it would be so much better.
They hyped it it would be.
Yeah. It's very disappointing. I'm I don't know. But you never know. Maybe it'll get better. I don't know. But... it's so far boring. Just
so
boring.
Far mad boring. But yes, I am watching it, sadly. Yeah. Oh my god, I haven't talked to you about this, but I'm genuinely curious, since you've been watching the clips from Nevertheless of Seoul and G1. What do you think about Seoul G1? Tell me.
I can't believe I'm a K-drama stan now.
Is that do you get it though, right? It's beautiful, their part only.
I tried to watch the whole thing, and then probably when I got to the most recent episodes, I was like, can I skip all the straight shit and just go straight to the gay? And I did, so whatever. Yeah, it's I get it. It's cute. It's a lot.
It is.
These people are also perfect in these ways, and I'm just like, that's not reality.
Well, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
It's a novella. It's the best kind, though. I love a novella.
Yeah, exactly. It's a novella. Just completely exaggerated. Everything is so romanticized. Men don't act like this. Men aren't that hygienic. You know what I mean? They just don't look that good. I don't know.
Well, actors in K-dramas do, though. They look great. They look... The plastic surgery.
Honestly, the main guy, he's my new hair inspo. I've been trying to experiment with my hair a little bit. I want to do some of that. Anyways,
that would be interesting. You should.
It's a long game for you lesbians that love that long term lusting. What is the actual
slow burn?
The slow burn. For you lesbians, I love the slow burn.
Me?
It doesn't get any slower than this. Go get it.
Yeah. I love a slow burn.
Me too, but damn.
You're but damn. Yeah, no, I'm living for this. I'm oh my god, what crumb, what pinch of salt will I get next? I'm so excited. It feels my childhood. You know what? Maybe it's just the nostalgia for me. I'm wow.
Maybe.
It feels like it's 2004. Yeah. South of nowhere.
Oh my, south of nowhere.
Crumbs. Anyways, yeah.
Alrighty. Well, completely off topic from everything that we've mentioned in banter, this is what our episode is going to be about, if you're ready. Fear Street. Holy fuck, did Netflix deliver? Where'd that come from? You've been holding out since 2017, apparently.
Yeah.
Well, no, not just Netflix, but damn. Yeah, the Fear Street trilogy came out back to back, week by week, every Friday for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And there's three parts: 1994, 1978, and 1666. That's not scary at all. But yeah, I guess before we get into it, I just want to know, did you get through it? Did you get all the way through these movies?
I made it through. It was a struggle. It lost me there in the second movie a lot.
It lost everybody.
Okay, good. Because I really didn't. I couldn't. It was parts where I was looking at my phone, and I was oh, oops, I'm back. But yeah, okay. I don't feel so bad.
No, don't.
But what did you think?
I fell in love with when the first movie came out. I was fuck, this is it. This is something that I would want to write. I would be so proud to have made something like this. The second one, I was okay, whatever. But then when it got to the third part, I was fucking brilliant. I couldn't have done this at all. And it kind of makes sense now that I kind of looked into it and found out that, four people wrote this thing. It took a lot of people. It took a village, not to be, ironic here. But... it took a lot. But I guess just to get into some background on it, Fear Street in general has been around for decades, all the way from R.L. Stine in the late 80s and books and shit like that. And it's been adapted and it's been changed and it's been books and it's been series. And now it's a film trilogy on Netflix, which was directed by Leigh Janiak. And she co-wrote it with Phil Graziadei.
Like that's that. A hard one. Zach, yeah.
Yeah. Zach Olkowicz and Kate Treffry. None of them are easy. Phil is the only one that I know to be queer in real life, and I think all of them are white, so do with what you will with that information.
Oh, like we couldn't tell from the writing? We could tell from the writing. We knew.
Sometimes, yeah. Some other times I was like, oh.
I wasn't mad at their white writer's room, though. It's okay.
Wasn't completely. It wasn't a writer's room necessarily, though. It was just like lay emails. With someone at each time, with each different movie. They didn't all write every movie. They wrote, mm-hmm. like, you know, split up.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this literally has been in the works since 2017, and the whole thing was shot before COVID started. So, I mean, like, that was kind of fortunate, right? They didn't have necessarily shooting delays, but it was supposed to be released last summer, and it was supposed to be a theatrical release, and they were going to do, like, a one-a-month thing. So it was probably going to be released, I don't know, like, June, July, August or something like that.
Oh, wow.
So it'd be like a triple blockbuster. But that didn't work out.
Nope, sure
and,
didn't.
And yeah, ended up on Netflix, which I think was a really great choice because it has the Netflix vibes, quite honestly.
Yeah. It has Stranger Thing vibes / well, everything else.
Right.
We'll talk about that later.
The coloring of it, for sure. But I, you know, I did some research, listened to some of the writers. And it sounds like, or they confirmed, that having queer female leads for this was always the move. It was always the plan. And there was no pushback on that, which is like, whoa, like, we're really entering an era. And even they were like, you know, this is not a common thing. It's far and few in between. But in this particular case, like, this was what it was going to be. And, like, this is what it was, right? And this is, like, rated R also for a reason, right? Like, there's a lot of violence, a lot of gore.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
There's sex, and there's a lot of stuff, and it's great. I loved it.
I mean, she said that she wanted to make it, like, as rated R as possible, because she was like, no, it has to feel like you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. And I was like,
right.
It definitely does.
And it has to push it, right? Because, like, it's paying homage to a lot of
oh god
slashers, like,
and non-slashers, like, and to Quentin Tarantino. I mean,
apparently
we hate the person, but aesthetically I get where she's coming from.
I get it, but it's just like I'm trying to look past that and just think about how it's like homage to slashers.
Look, the motherfucker can make a movie, but also he sucks, so
yeah
those two things can be real.
The thing is that I loved about it is that it's not just a slasher, right? Because it brings in this myth of Sarah Fear, which is, like, in itself, like, paranormal, or it's evil, or it's, like, satanic and stuff like that. Like, it just goes beyond, and I was really, really stoked on that shit. But with that said, it has all the slasher tropes. Yep. And, you know, with people hesitate to make slashers because it's been done over and over again. It's been done, analyzed. Overanalyzed, done again, analyzed again. Like, it's never ending. So they literally just, like, they dove in to the tropes. They were like, we're gonna do them all, and then we're gonna, like, add a little something, and then we're gonna overcome them, and then we're, you know, because the part of the fun of horror films are those tropes. It's being able to, like, scream at the theater and be like, why are you being so fucking stupid? Why don't you do this to the monster and kill it?
It's an interactive experience,
right? But in this, they kind of, like, try to push that boundary. They're like, well, you know what? We are going to try everything, all right? We're going to bomb the shit out of the monsters.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work. So, but that's kind of a part of, like, they built it into who these characters are, especially in 1994, right? Like, they are doing everything they can to survive because that's who they are. They're people who are not privileged, who are not on top. Like, they have to survive. They do this. They already know how to do this because they've been doing this their whole lives, and now they're just doing it to monsters. And I love that. But they figured out, they fucking, even if it's temporarily, you know, these fucking creators, they know, like, all about horror. They know, like, I don't know. They just knew how to interpret it for a modern audience, at least in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, the gore was there. I maybe wasn't a big fan of all of the violence. I liked the more ridiculous aspects of the violence. Like, there's one particular scene where someone's head goes through, like, a bread shredder. I really, really liked that one. It felt really 90s.
That really one was, like, a specific homage to a movie, like, where they do the exact same thing. Oh, yeah, it was...
Okay.
It was... That one was the hardest one for me to watch. You thought, like...
Emotionally, right?
Emotionally, I was like, no! Yeah, it was hard. But, like, not because of the gore, but because of who got killed.
Yeah, no, like, I mean, outside of, like, who the person was, I thought it was just cool and interesting and different. And it I felt like it respectfully played that homage. I don't know, that one, it just made me think of, like, Quentin Tarantino and, like, Fargo. It made me think of those kind of, like, slasher movies that were more, like, crime, less like, horror, you know? Like, anyways, I really liked it. It was cool. But, I don't know. I don't usually like gore, but 1994... really kind of changed my mind. Like, I really enjoyed that one, and the violence didn't seem like, it felt like really ridiculous, so it felt like okay to watch. The rest of them, though, like, they really, the second one she talks about, there was, it was significantly more violent to me, and she does talk about in a couple interviews where she said that she wasn't in a good emotional state of mind, she was tired, so she just really went for it, and so that's why that one is so violent and really, really, really crazy. And I was just,
they
like,
ante,
I'm good.
Like, with every movie, you know?
Yeah.
It got more and more violent. And, like, maybe less overall, but, like, the actual content of it, I feel like it got worse and worse. But speaking of Leigh Janiak, she was very, very much, like, blunt about, like, the whole thing just being, like, homage after homage, including, like, the attention that she paid to the scoring and the soundtrack and
soundtrack.
The time periods.
Perfect.
Yeah, it was really good. But music was a major focus. It, like, she really wanted to put you in those times, and she made the efforts, like, aesthetically to honor what, like, the 90s and 70s were. And I'm sure she took, like, a really good guess at what it was like in the 1600s.
<'Cause>, I don't know. Yeah, there's not a lot of pictures, not a lot of movies from back then.
Yeah, but also, like, even in the content, like, 1994, it literally starts in a mall. Like, what's more 90s than the mall? And wearing skeleton costumes and,
oh god,
you know,
Donnie Darko
and rival high schools, like,
oh god,
battling it out, like, all that shit was so 90s. The other thing before we, I kind of want to start diving into 1994 if you're cool with it, but
yeah,
before that I want to mention that she talked about how, like, they literally built in the queer and POC characters, like, into the genre to try and refresh it. It wasn't like, here's the story, and then let's just, like, later on make the decision of making them queer and making them brown or black. Like, that was built in. That was, like, a part of the plan of, like, making characters that are usually side characters who die be the survivors or the leads or the people who make it, you know, or, like, continue to come back. So I thought that was cool, you know, like,
that is cool.
If I mean, it's, if you're gonna, you know, we've seen it before, creators that come up with a concept, they just change the person and then into a person of color, and they don't really do any work beyond that, and those fall flat very often. We talk shit about them all the time. So I'm glad that it was done with some care, and which is probably why there's not a whole lot to complain about in that department. Not that there's nothing to complain about, but not a lot.
No, I mean, I agree. Like, the representation that we always ask for is there. Like, and they did really good at deciding not to really lean into stereotypes as far as, like, ethnically or, like, well, I don't know. The lesbians arguing was a little bit too real. But that one was like, what? Okay. No, but everyone else didn't feel like a stereotype. And I think that was intentional. Like, the lead is, like, burnout, lesbian, band nerd. And then, like, her little brother's, like, the little nerd. Yeah. Like, and the drug dealing friend is, like, the perfect student, you know?
They're such, like, nice people. They're not demonizing it.
they're not demonizing it. Like, there's so much there that just feels really nice. That
I love the side characters in this. And, you know, but in the past, we've talked about stuff where we love the side characters because they're always the brown ones and the queer ones. In this case, no, they're the leads.
Everybody. Yeah, that's everyone.
And in this case, they're the leads. And the side characters is, like, for example, Kate and Simon. So, like, Simon is this, like, white guy who... like, it's just a regular-ass white guy, but we like him because, you know, he isn't this, like, over-masculine, like, douchey guy. He's almost queer-coded, you know? He's, like, you know, a little, like, I don't know, softer, and he's not, like, gross and, like, sexualizing women. He's funny as fuck. He's the, he's, like, the comedic relief in this a lot of the times. And on the flip side, there's Kate, who we already you already mentioned.
Yeah.
And she's, like, tough as shit, takes no shit, and she's smarter than you, stronger than you, she's holding harder drugs than you. Like, this is the kind of role that you see on a guy a lot, but it's her. It's Kate. So, I like them a lot, and both of them gave me bi energy, and one of the writers confirmed that they were meant to be queer-coded, so that's cool.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. No, like, it passes, like, our tests as far as, like, I mean, not a lot of black women. I'm looking at the cast now.
I mean, yeah. Kiana Madeira she's biracial.
Yeah.
She's,
But she's really light, so.
She's light-skinned, yeah.
She's really, really light.
But yeah, you're right.
Not a lot of black women. His name okay. is
Martin. Yeah, I Martin later.
Oh, yeah, later.
I love, like, the comeback of his storyline, but we'll talk about it later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that one. Anyways, but, like, the casting, the representation, like, 5 bundles good shit. For that. Good they shit. Did a good job, whoever did that. No black women, but, you know, so minus, actually, it's not 5 bundles, that has to go down to a 4. Because it's, like, it's still America, it's still Ohio.
I mean, still, like, you know... to get into 1994 a little bit more, because we haven't talked about the plot very much at all.
No.
So if you guys don't want spoilers, tune out, because I think pretty much from here on out, we're going to go pretty hard on it.
Yeah.
So 1994, it starts off that there's yet another killing spree in Shadyside, which is in this series, the murder capital of the U.S.
In Ohio.
And everyone, like, writes this off as, like, another kid gone bad. And, like, everyone's, like, just chill about a whole ass murder happening. Except for Dina, who's, like, sick of the shit. Dina is, like, the one that's played by Kiana Madeira. She's one of our lesbians. And she is, like, extra pissed because she's going through a breakup with this, like, mysteriously ungendered Sam. I love how they try to keep it a secret for, like, 20 minutes.
Oh, that's
and
right.
then we kind of come to, like, learn about the myth of the town, which is Seraphir. And the myth is that it was a witch that was hanged in 1666, and she's cursed the town for doing that, you know? So Dina doesn't believe in all that shit, but her little brother Josh does. And he has all these theories, and he does all this research about all the major killers of Shadyside. And he just has it up on his wall. You know how they always have those walls of, like, newspaper clippings?
Conspiracy. Like, he's a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Dina, meanwhile, is, like, looking for closure. So she goes to, like, this vigil for one of the teens that got murdered at the beginning of the film. And we find out that her ex is Sam, and Sam is a girl. And Sam has a new boyfriend because she moved to a new town, and it's, like, a wealthy and privileged town called Sunnyvale that is, like, the nemesis of Shadyside. And she's crossed over to the dark side, which is, like, straightness. And
oh, man.
So they fucking duke it the fuck out, not just her and her ex, but, like, Shadyside versus Sunnyvale. And... long story short, they end up in a fucking weird ass car accident, and Sam touches the bones of the witch Seraphir, which causes her to, like, basically be cursed in some way, and people killers start trying to kill her. All right, like, So they have to like fight her off, and that's like the major the plot of the movie is them trying to survive.
It just takes off from there and doesn't stop, really.
Yeah, exactly. It's just that, and it's just a lot of gore and a lot of slashing. It's great. It's fantastic. Once they figure out that this is a bigger fucking deal than you think, and you keep thinking like, okay, one of these lesbians is about to die, but they don't, which was fucking that, great. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just, you know, one of them turns into a demon, but like whatever. And yeah, then
normal.
Yeah, and then it gets kind of fun from there because they realize like we got a lot of shit to do. We got to figure this out. So they go to the only person ever recorded to have survived one of these killings, which is C. Berman. And this turns out to be Christine, which is like the lady from Community. And, and then that dives us into the next part, which is the part that we don't love very much because it's very straight. It's based in 1978, obviously. And
obviously
and yeah, I don't know who names a summer camp Camp Nightwing and then like doesn't expect murder to happen there
at night.
Yeah, like that's way worse than sleepaway camp.
Sleepaway camp, look, I saw the reference there, though. I saw what they were trying to do with this movie.
It was a whole genre. It wasn't just sleepaway camp. There was a lot of going to camp and getting killed movies during that time. Sleepaway camp is a big iconic one, especially amongst people who do research on like horror and queerness and transness.
Yeah, it's pretty iconic. You know what I did notice? Well, maybe, you know what, we'll get to that later. This one wasn't for me. I saw what they were doing. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
But Too Straight kind of lost me.
1978 is just a history on C. Berman. You're just finding out what Christine's history is. And yeah, it's partly from like the POV of her sister and vice versa. And there's like a little bit of a confusion there. But it's also kind of a history lesson on a lot of the monsters that they have to fight in 1994. You see the origin story for them. But it's also, like, the least creative of the trilogy, right? Like, it follows all the tropes without having a fun take on it.
Yeah.
It's just, like, the sister line is boring. It's really blatant and basic. And, like, all the sexually active girls die. And, like, that's basic as fuck. Like, you're not subverting anything. Even though that's covered by, like, this, like, theory that all the Shadysiders die because they're Shadysiders. And that, you know, all the Sunnyvalers live because they're Sunnyvalers. But in this particular case, it happens to be that just women die.
You know, one thing that I thought they did really good, speaking of, like, the whole, like, every sexually active teenage girl dies, is that, like...
Just in 1978 for this particular.
No, they didn't do that in the other movies. The other movies, I noticed is it was drug use. Like, whoever was, like, actively doing drugs were the people that got killed. And I thought that was pretty interesting. Instead of, like, it being, you know, teen virginity or whatever, female virginity, it was just, like, are you doing drugs, honey? Well, you're gonna die. Like, that was, like, I thought that was an interesting one. Like, to me, that's what I saw flipped. And I was like, okay. Here we go, you know?
For it's two of them, yeah. There was some that died that weren't. But yeah, I get what you're saying. Mm-hmm. That is interesting. It wasn't about sexuality on the other ones. But in 1978, they dove into that trope. Absolutely. And you know, like all three of the movies, none of them are skippable. All of them are tied in together. But that's just because you just need the context so you can dive into the next movie. This is just like, you need a little bit of context to lead you to 1666. So that's all that movie kind of was. But I will give credit to one character, Alice, who we were all kind of looking forward to seeing because they're played by a non-binary actor named Ryan Simpkins. And, cool. You know, we're always down to see the Envy's getting roles. And it was a cool character. Like, definitely had, like, some interesting moments. But damn, like, y'all could have done a little more with that.
Yeah, I feel like they focused too much on the gore part. And I feel like maybe the story should have been explored. Even though they're all... No, the other two are really strong in that, actually. Nope. I stand by the other two. I stand strong with them.
One thing that, throughout the whole trilogy, it wasn't super obvious. like just the race element, but it peaked in, if you like really look, you'll see that, like, you know how Shadyside and Sunnyvale, they have like their own shirts, one is red, one is blue, like Blood and Crip. Like, the Shadyside, you would notice that like more of the like the camp kids or whatever, they were like POC and white, like both of them, and then on Sunnyvale they're mostly just white. So like it was kind of like scattered in there, you know. In 1978 all the main characters are white, and it kind of sucks for that reason, and amongst other reasons, but you kind of start to notice things like that, like there is a race element here, they just don't overtly talk about it.
Yeah, because who can afford sleepaway camp? That shit's expensive, like.
Well, I mean, they're there.
They're there.
But the focus is just always directed at, like, instead of saying, like, oh, it's a race thing or whatever, they direct it at, oh, Shadyside has terrible luck. The people in Shadyside, like, are poor, you know, in classism and stuff like that. Which is true, but it's also, like, low-key. Like, it's also people of color who are in Shadyside and not Sunnyvale.
So, I feel like that was a pretty honest take on, like, classism in America. Yeah. Like,
exactly. That brought
me back in. Like, I was like, yo, this is so smart. Like, yes, but like, it's like the white male cops suck.
But they don't even speak. I'm talking about specifically 1978 right now, but, like, they don't even, like, have speaking POC characters in that. It was just frustrating. You have to, like, really look for that kind of
thing. I mean, they really did. They did every trope. They were like, let's give them the basic white shit from the 70s. Let's give them that. And I thought that was interesting.
But actually, like, you make a good point. Like, in moving back a little bit to 1994, mm-hmm. they portray, like, teens who have to, like, work for a living really mm-hmm. well. Because in the media, you always see teenagers who have to support themselves as just that. Like, these working teens who struggle, and that's their whole identity. But in this, Kate and Simon are those people, right? They mm-hmm. have to work their asses off. But that's not their identifiers, right? You identify Simon as brave and funny. You identify Kate as like a badass bitch, like
super smart.
They did really well at that, because, and it was relatable, right? Like, when I was 15 and working and like going wild in the bank, I was still like, you know, I was still doing other shit. I was still like falling in love and doing hood shit with my friends, and like like the money that I had to make, like, that didn't define me, like. And I really appreciated that, I will say, even though 1978 is trash still.
But like, 1978, it just didn't, like, can we talk about the lighting in 1994?
I mean, yeah, it was nighttime the whole time.
Not just nighttime, it was, like, really shitty lighting.
Yeah, that's the treatment that the lesbians get.
Yeah, really shitty lighting. I mean, it's purposeful. Like, they did that on purpose.
It's horror film, right? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But yeah, anyways.
But, you know, it serves to push us into the next iteration, right? Because we find out, like, how to, or like, where this stuff originated. We find out where the body is. We find out all these things, right, that lead us to Dina getting close to these, to Seraphir's hand, her literal like bones of her hand, and like as soon as she touches them, she's sucked into the world of 1666, which is fucking fascinating. All right, and I hope that the creators are fully proud of themselves for being able to like do a complete 180 away from the slasher like genre and goes fully into a witchy, depressing period drama. Because that's exactly what they do. They're like, they stop with the funny shit, the neon lights, the campiness. It goes 180 and all of a sudden we're like Irish or some shit. And like using all the actors from the first two films to represent like the new characters that are like way back in the day. That was fucking genius, because all of them represent something still, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they all, some of them are literal descendants of these people back in 1666. And you don't feel the whiplash. It helps, it almost helps you, like,
understand,
go to the next.
Characters.
Yes, yeah. And also it helps you go to the next genre, because it's quite a bit of a jump. But, like, since you have the same characters and you know their personalities, like, you don't feel the whiplash. It's great. It's like that has not been done. Like, that's the one thing that I can say, like, that's mad original of them to do. So
that was really cool. I didn't know that. I don't know if anyone else has done that. You're right.
I can't think of it. I might be right, but I've watched a lot of horror in my day.
Yeah, this is your whole thing.
Yeah, and like the thing is that white creators to this day and forever have been using period pieces as an excuse to not cast people of color forever. Oof. Right?
Yeah.
And this film literally said, fuck that. All of us are fucking Irish. We're still gay and we still do drugs and teenager shit. Like, how fucking awesome is that? Like, yeah, it was great. But they kind of like, we find out who the real villains are in this when it comes to 1666. This is the origin story of Sarah Fear. You know what I mean? This mm-hmm. is like the Fear Street cinematic universe is developed at this point. It's great. Yeah.
She's going to make her own MCU.
Yeah.
That's what she said she wants to do.
She better. But yeah, so like to take a step back for a second, but like queer trauma and queer pain and coming out stories, that's something that we've talked about a lot that we want to move past, right? But
This isn't really that. This is the 90s.
This is the 1600s. So you can't. I mean, I'm not gonna fucking complain about homophobia existing. Like it did.
Yeah.
Like if it didn't, that would be weird. So yeah, it just makes sense in the context of this. And I thought it was like pretty genius to blend the witch hanging trope with queerness, because it's always been a metaphor for queerness, and this time it's like, no, it is queer. Like it's what it is. Like like they said it with their chest, as we have previously requested.
No, yeah, but like they didn't center like coming out. Like there's fucking witches and like undead monsters. So this is not just like a coming out story. It's not like that afternoon special on like Lifetime.
No. Yeah, not in that way. I just mean like homophobia being a factor of like a conflict in a story, you know, like in that way.
Which kind of is
in this, but it also like isn't the problem, because that's what they think, right? They think that, oh, we spent a night together, that's why the town is now going through all this shit. We cursed the town with our lesbianism. That's what they think. They think that in 1994, too, they say something like that. They're like, wow, we're together for one night and all this bad shit happens. It's like that anxiety around queerness. And then that's subverted. It's immediately splashed. Like, no, it's not lesbianism. It's like
systemic. White men.
Yeah, it's systemic racism. It's white supremacy. Like, it's everything else. And I kind of love that, right? Because everyone has that doubt at first. So
you think it's because they're gay? And it's only because of the regular things in life that are actually scary. You're like, oh, yay, white supremacy, fun. We love it.
So, I mean, yeah, I was stoked on it being such an overt thing and also, like, not the ultimate bad thing. Like, just don't be gay. Like, that's not going to help anything. And then, like, Sarah Fear herself, which, so if you guys want the spoiler and don't know, I don't know why you're going this far if you haven't seen the movies, but you know, Dina turns into Sarah Fear, and Sarah Fear is in love with the pastor's daughter.
Word,
bro. Fucking hashtag relatable.
Oh no.
But like,
oh man,
you know, a full moon rises before nightfall and a good night to enjoy the fruits of the land or whatever, like that's the shit that they say before they go off and like get fucked up at night.
You remember it, man?
No, I wrote it down, but like
okay
because the way that they would say it just tripped me the fuck out, because it was so like, how do you say that and you sound like seductive, like a good night to enjoy the fruits of the land, like bro.
Yeah, no, it's not it.
But it was so nice, that first moment that you see Sarah Fear with Hannah Miller, who were played by the two lesbian characters in 1994, because that same care is taken for them. You know, like, there's this cute banter, there's a soft music. They're like, you can see their immediate chemistry and, like, how in love they are even in 1666. Like, immediately.
It needed that. it needed that because they were just fighting in 1994 before she turns into a demon. So it's kind of like, well, yeah, they want to be together. Is that healthy? And then I guess they were like, no, let's back that up. They do love each other. Look, they even loved each other in 1666. And you're like, yeah, wow, soulmates, whatever. God,
that's, like, whoever wrote that, like, they knew that that's some lesbian shit right there. Like, longing. Oh, we love each other and whatever.
In every generation.
Decade. Yeah.
that our town is cursed in, yes.
I laugh about it, but they're catering to me.
It's they did, great. Though.
Yeah. But yeah, like we were talking about earlier, to your point, each film finds a way to up the ante on the gore and the violence. We find out where the first shady side killer came from, and it's from this, who commits like the worst fucking crime. Like, do you remember what he was like the preacher or the pastor that, you know, Hannah Miller's dad, fucking killing all those kids? Like, that shit was really hard to see. Like, it had a lot less like general amount of violence in 1666, but it was,
that's such a gotcha worse thing.
It's it was gotcha, such a worse, yeah, they like still upped it in my opinion. So yeah, they like, if you want to see some scary, gory, bad shit, like, this is it. This is for you. Go do it.
So if you're like me, then maybe stay away from the second one.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. Like, a lot happens in, I mean, I don't know if you remember the plot of the film, but it's pretty basic. Like, they go and they do lesbian shit. Then at the same time, this guy is doing demonic shit. There's, like, a character named Sam Good, or Sam Goody, I think he was called back then.
Mm-hmm.
He's literally Nick Good's, like, ancestor. And this dude goes mad bonkers and, like, sells his soul to the devil or whatever so that he can have prosperity. And that's, like, one big-ass metaphor for white supremacy.
Yep.
And, yeah, like, there's literally, like, in 1994 Part 2, which is after 1666... there's literally a moment where Nick Good is describing, like, this ritual has been passed down for generations in my family, and it started with Solomon, and, like, over and over, these white men choose to continue this violent tradition of privilege and power, and they value it over everything. That's where, like, it originates, right? Like, it's almost like an origin story to white supremacy, even though that's not where it actually started, but...
started way before that.
Right. But, like, they're just putting it out there so blatantly. And so, you know, Solomon Good blames everything on this girl because she's a lesbian and she's an easy scapegoat. And what's interesting is that in the first two films and at the beginning of 1666, Sam Good or Nick Good, they're all coded as the good guy, right? The guy who, like, he's there for you, or he doesn't judge Seraphir for being gay. He doesn't judge the girl in the second movie for being from Shadyside. He does all these things that are good, or this general character does, but he's not good. Like, he's gonna choose power over everything. And that was a big part of the metaphor too. It's like, you know, the good guys are not always good. Like, so I don't know, it was interesting.
There was another part that was a little bit too on the nose, where, like, the curse had to be, like, you had to, like, literally get the blood from the poor people so that you could still maintain privilege and success and wealth and power.
Yeah,
I was like, that's so literal.
It was a sacrifice, right? Like, every now and then the devil would ask for blood, and the guy would choose somebody from Shadyside to basically turn evil. So yeah, he was literally sacrificing a whole ass person,
and literally,
which would turn into a dozen people, because that person would kill a bunch of people.
I mean, it was like a beautiful metaphor of capitalism. I was just like, word, yeah, like, the only way they can maintain themselves,
colonialism, yeah,
poor, like, people continue to literally die, like, give their blood to this, like, and I was just like, this is like, I see what y'all's doing. Y'all's writers, the writers were writing.
It was there. And they were doing it very intentionally. Like, the end of 1666, before the actual end, like, technically white supremacy is winning, right? But
yeah,
you ended on an almost empowering note, because Seraphir makes this fucking promise. She actually does curse Solomon good. Not the whole town, just him. And she curses him and says, like, for the rest of your fucking life, for the rest of all your ancestors' lives, I will fucking hunt you down. Like, I will always haunt you. I will always be there. She has that whole monologue about, like, you will never, ever rest easy because I'm always going to be going after you. And that's why people over and over are able to, like, see into, like, Seraphir's life when they touch her bones and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But it's really interesting how she, like, she kind of brings it back, because then you almost don't feel completely out of hope when eventually Seraphir is hanged, because you're like, okay, I mean, yes, that sucks, but we're going back to 1994 where, like, her vengeance now is in the hands of Dina, who is, like, who is that bitch, you know what I mean? She's, like, the one that's gonna, like, she's, you know that fucking cheesy ass saying, like, oh, I am, like, the, my ancestor's wildest dreams, or whatever the fuck, like, that's, oh God, that kind of fucking vibe, that cheesy ass vibe, where she's just, like, you know, this is what Seraphir wanted. She wanted to be openly queer and with her girl type of thing, and now here's Dina, and Dina is, like, kind of that, who that person is, and she's also going to be the one to avenge her finally. So she's got the tools, she's got the information, she knows what Seraphir went through, and she knows that Nick Good is, like, the key to ending all of this. So now we're back to 1994 part fucking two, the last 40 minutes of 1666, and we've inceptioned into the other years, and so now, you know, appropriately, we have to put an end to the curse. The curse being a white male cop.
On the nose. Again, yeah. They're not really and making them, like, you think here. They're just, like, yeah,
and them,
go,
like, hitting the nail on the head that way. But like I said, this was shot prior to COVID. Like, them hitting that note was, mm-hmm, like, in, kind of impressive, because it's just a bunch of white people. Yeah. So, props to them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, after that, everything goes kind of fast, right? You know exactly what you have to do. You have one goal, kill Nick Good. And they go to this guy, Martin, who is this guy that they ran into at the police station, who Nick Good kept bullying, because probably because he's black, to be honest.
For sure.
It's racism.
Definitely.
And, you know, Josh had done him a solid. So Josh is like, hey, you know how I did you a solid? You want to, like, help me kill Nick Good? And he was like, fuck yeah, let's go.
He's like, just let me get my jacket. Like,
yeah, let me get my coat. Let's go. So they go, and along with Martin, along with Steve Berman or Christine, like, this is kind of also another, like, almost metaphor. The whole community, everybody has to come together to defeat this guy, right? That's what it takes. That's what they were missing in 1666, is, you know, the villagers standing up for her. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have now in 1994. Like, so everybody comes together, and we make it happen. Dina stabs him in the fucking eye. It's fucking great. And then it, once again, it kind of stumbles onto more points about white supremacy and stuff, because they end up taking that, like, tunnel that kind of appears in every single one into Nick Good's house, which is full of, like, iconography of, like, Satanism, but also, like, there's this family tree of, like, how much he, like, really cherishes what Solomon Good gave him. And it's also
his,
like,
white robes.
It's an obsession with his heritage, which, like, what does that remind you of? Fucking Confederates,
yeah,
out here.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, so it's just interesting how they go about that. And then in one of the last things that they say to each other, Hannah Miller and Seraphir, is about how, like, one day they're gonna, like, kiss openly in the daylight. And that's how the movie ends. It's, yeah, Dina and Sam kissing openly in the daylight, surrounded by the, like, red blooms of that flower that was in 1666 with Sarah and stuff. What is it with lesbians and flowers?
I mean, flowers.
Says the bitch that, like, got her hand tattooed with a whole ass flower based on a lesbian movie.
You gotta wait, based on a lesbian movie.
Imagine me and you.
Oh my God, I didn't get that. Now we both have lesbian movie tattoos that, like, yeah. Oh my God.
It's my lesbian movie tattoo. out and proud. One of these days I'll post it. But so yeah, great. It's just, it was great. I think, and obviously they left some wiggle room for further sequels, and Lee, the director, is like highly hinting at it. I think she's really trying to manifest it at this point. I don't think there's any actual deals in the works, but hopefully we get another generation, another version of this. I certainly wouldn't mind.
Oh my god, I wouldn't mind it as long as it's not that gory. I'm a little punk. I don't mind the gore. Yeah, I'm the second one just lost me. I don't know. Well, hopefully, you know, this is not really my genre. This is not really my vibe. But even knowing that and saying that, like, it was actually really enjoyable. I really enjoyed the first movie and the last movie. Those two are, for me, like, really interesting. And I thought they really subverted
all the shitty, these, like, tropes. Yes. Yeah, that shit on things, queerness.
But see, like, that's the thing I hate about horror is, like, I hate shitty tropes. Like, try. Just be original once. And they did that. They literally did that. And so, you know, for that alone, I'm just like, thank you. Shout out to everyone who made this shit, because they did pretty good. I don't know what exactly I'd rate it, but I have to think about that. You can go first, because I have to think about that.
As an old... I mean, obviously, like... If we go individually, 1984 for me is like no cafecitos.
Mm-hmm.
1978 is like a hard two cafecitos, dude, because that was not easy for me to watch.
A struggle.
Like, maybe even like 2.5. That shit was boring. That shit was white as hell and straight as hell.
Yeah.
And no. It just was not good. But 1666, I fucking loved it. No cafecitos there. Mm-hmm. And part two of 1984, probably no cafecitos there either. I loved it, and it played into everything that, like, I love, and that's just, like, repetitiveness and slashing and metaphors and queerness.
You know, I want her to keep making stuff, because I feel like there's some real good things that they did with the gore that I'm usually not into, and I thought that was interesting, so I'm going to add maybe to what I would originally. But 1994 is my favorite one, the first one. Yeah. I'd have to give that one, like, 5 panduzas. I really fucked with it. By the time I finished it, I was so excited to watch 1978. Like, I couldn't turn it on fast enough.
That sucks. That's how they get you.
Yeah. And then I was like, oh my god, how am I gonna make it through the third movie? And so going back to the third one was kind of like jarring. So like, maybe the order wasn't right, but I really fuck with the third one as well. So I would give that one maybe 4.5 to 4 panduzas. And then, like, 1 panduza to the middle one, just because
one
of, like,
whole panduza just for the non-binary character only.
Yeah, only for the non-binary
not character, but actor.
So shout out to them. But yeah, no. It's gonna be like a solid 4 to 4.5 there. So like for everybody. And the second one, just don't watch it. It's fine. You don't miss anything. You're good.
You miss a little bit. I would watch it and then just like be on TikTok at the same time.
Okay, yeah, be on TikTok at the same time. That's a good.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, if you're really into campy slashers from the 80s, then you might actually like it. I don't know. The people that I watched it with really liked it. They were also straight and white, so maybe that's why. So. Good luck to you all.
Good luck. But yeah, but outside of this, like, we should probably talk about Gunpowder Milkshake, because that's kind of like,
I haven't seen it.
The way you feel about horror is the way I feel about action. And like action, it's like Kill Bill / like non-racist, non-homophobic Quentin Tarantino. Like, if you mix those two. Like,
I heard not great things about it, so I'm interested to hear your take on it.
I mean, because it's camp, though. Like, you can't look at it and be expecting, like, Atomic Blonde style anything. Like, kind of, but it's camp.
Like, you're supposed to expect, like, it's not supposed to be good.
No. It's supposed to be ridiculous. You're supposed to be like, how more...
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, the only thing I could compare it to is, like, Debs, if it was, like, less gay.
Oh.
Less gay Debs. But it was still very queer. Let me tell you.
It was queer? Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
I have invented something queer. It's not like...
I have my homework assignment.
Yes, please. Because it's like camp and queer and it's like Debs. But like,
I love Debs.
Exactly. That's the only way I can explain it. Like, as ridiculous as Debs was, that's how ridiculous this shit was. It was great. Mwah.
I just go in there. I understand the intention now. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. But yeah, thanks for like letting me do this outside of October. Now it I don't know gay. What the fuck I'm gonna do in October, but
it was gay and it didn't have any like you know, it had gay POC leads, so like, wow, like, let's do it.
And it was impressively gay.
Like, yeah, being gay was like the whole point, so I was like, I love this. Yeah,
yeah,
this
which is right, has been the point in horror for decades, but this is the first one with the fucking balls to be like, no, it's gay,
it's just gay, like, there's
gay,
no
why
gay why.
You know what that means.
Yeah, we talked about it.
No one ever gets
it.
Me when I say that.
We talked about it on this podcast.
Did we? Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, yeah, I know, I forget what I said yesterday, so you're good.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody, and follow us on Instagram at CYC Podcast and on Twitter at the same. Go to our website, cabronesychinganas.com, for full show notes and links to all the shit, and to, as well as to our social medias, which is MYTE Panda on Instagram and Twitter for me.
And I'm at Fried Papita on Twitter for me. And feel free to DM us any questions about anything we haven't covered, or anything about movies, any questions about if we're going to cover something. Well, actually, maybe we should like shout y'all out for that question. That would be interesting if we read it. But send us your questions if you have any.
Yeah, cycpodcastmail@gmail.com too, if you want to hit the email. And then we also have a Patreon where you can support us. That's literally how we keep this show going.
Yes.
Patreon.com/CYC podcast. The link is in the description and in our bios. And you can also support us by getting some cool merch.
Yes.
On Teespring. The links are also all over the fucking place. CabronesyChiganas.com has everything. So hit that up if you need any of the stuff that we've already mentioned. So yeah, follow us, like us, leave us an iTunes review, because that's really what matters the most.
For some reason, that's what matters.
Yeah, for some fucking weird reason. It's a status thing, you know?
Yeah. Bye, guys.
Bye.